Blog Talk Radio.
Summertime Literary Festival, live on Tribe Family Channel, hosted by the creator of Tribe Family Channel, yours truly, Beverly. Hello, everyone. I am Beverly Black, and it is an honor, privilege, and a pleasure to be back on with our second show, this Literary Festival. Today's guest is Electa Rome Parks. Born and raised in Chicago, a Georgia peach, Electa has lived in Chicago and North Carolina for many years. Basically, she's your average down-to-earth wife, mother of two, who has a great passion for writing and reading. Believe it or not, she's actually kind of quiet and laid back. She says she can be moody and oversensitive as a Pisces trait. Another Pisces trait she discusses is being approachable and a genuine, caring, nurturing human being. She says she has a few imperfections and struggles just like the next person. However, I believe, and she does too, in order to really get in touch with our true spirit, we need to discover our gifts and use them to make a difference. This is the difference I hope I am making in your life as a publisher and an author myself. And I welcome Electa Rome Parks. Hi, Electa. How are you?
Hi, Beverly. I'm fine. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you again. You know, you have been here before. We want to thank you for supporting Tribe Family Channel's Literary Festival. And this is sponsored by Electa Rome Parks. And we know that you have many titles in print. What we want to do is... Because you're such a seasoned author and have been with the publishing houses, you know, have been in the game for so many years and have had so many different experiences, we're going to get into the meat and business of publishing and, you know, allow you to share some of the knowledge and sage that, okay. You know, you use. And so
Okay, sounds great.
All right. Well, thank you, and thank you for spending, you know, this next hour to 90 minutes. You know, I don't know how much time you have, but I know that it's been one of those rough weeks, you know. Congratulations to, you know, your new role and position and what you're doing in your life, you know, and your new destiny.
Uh-huh.
Now, as far as writing, how many titles do you have in print, by the way?
I actually have 11 titles in print. And every time I think about that, it's like totally amazing to me because of the fact that I remember, even though it's been many years, I still remember when it was just a dream of mine to be a published author and I had all these story ideas that was just competing against one another. So here it is, you know, years later, and I have 11 titles in print.
Wow, wow. You know, that is wonderful. Congratulations. That
well, thank
is
you.
Just
thank
amazing.
You.
And, you know, it really does feel good as the numbers start climbing, you know, when you, you know, you have your first baby, and it's like, oh,
I know,
you know,
I know.
Published, yes, you know, my first baby. And then, you know, after the party's over and you're on to book two, and then as you start getting, okay, two, three, now they're sitting in a row, and it's like, oh, this is cool. You know?
Yes, exactly. But you know what, Beverly, is that each time it's almost like having that new baby all over again, because each book with different characters, I'm always so excited, and you're always, at least I am, a little anxious for the world to kind of be introduced to your new baby and your new characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always just such an experience, and it's such a highlight after putting in all the work and all the, you know, the hard work and the sweat and the tears, and to finally be able to release it to the public. And you're always anxious for those first reviews to come in and see how your new baby is being embraced. So it's just a great, it's just a really great humbling experience. And I've always loved interacting with my readers and new readers discovering me. And it's just been a great ride. I mean, I can definitely say it's been one of the greatest experiences that I've had in my lifetime.
Wow. It definitely truly does feel like giving birth, you know, each time in reference to that waiting, that longing, that, you know, we're almost there. Okay?
Exactly.
Now we're so almost there, then we're almost there again. Then we're almost there again sometimes.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. We are,
you know,
we definitely go through the whole process, the rewrites, the editing, you know, it's all of that, but it's so worth it, and it's just such a great experience, and I'm just so glad that I've been able to be in the game, you know, these many years, and to, you know, and continuously increase my readership base. And, you know, I've always loved doing book clubs. I think that's my very favorite, just being kind of like in an intimate setting with book club members and discussing the book and kind of, you know, bonding through books, food, and wine, as I say. But but it's just it's just really been something. And that's why I know it's a gift. That's why I know that it's something that will always be a part of me regardless, because it just – it's really hard to, as a writer, it's actually really hard to actually describe the feeling, but I just feel so connected when I'm writing and when I'm releasing these characters into the world and I'm getting my message out there. It's just such, it's just very powerful, and that's something I never get past that feeling each time.
Mm-hmm. That is so true. That is so true. I consult with authors, and so it's also true for me when my mentees or clients are pregnant, and it is like, oh my,
I know you're just excited.
It's
yourself, because the same with me. There are a lot of people over the years, you know, aspiring authors, some just starting out, that, you know, have come my way, and I'm always open to share, because I know it's a hard industry, it's a hard business, and if I can save some people from some of the hardships or some of the mistakes that I made, then I'm always open for that. And it's always great, you know, when their baby, they finally give birth to their baby, and maybe they put you, you know, thank you in the acknowledgments or whatever. But it's really a satisfying experience to know that you've enabled in whatever way to make someone else realize their dreams as well.
That is so true. Now, describe the journey through your first book.
Wow, this is, God, we got to go back some years here. let me kind of start from the beginning, my little story. Basically, I was always the quiet, shy girl, and so reading, writing, always been a part of me, always been there, because what I couldn't express verbally, I could express it through my writings. So I was always the one as a child that had the little diary. Then as I got older, I started keeping the journals and kept the journals for many, many years. I was always writing little short stories. I was the one in church who wrote the little plays that we acted out in church. I even tried my hand at poetry. Usually it was if I was upset about something. I found I could only write angry poetry. But, and so but I never thought I could do it as a career. I basically, growing up, you know, there were not a lot of African American books out there, at least contemporary anyway. There were a lot of classics that I read in high school and college. But then later, when kind of the explosion hit with the success of Terry McMillan, she so inspired me. I remember still to this day picking up a copy of Disappearing Acts. And that book, oh, my God, I loved that book. I still remember the feeling of reading Disappearing Acts. And
wow. It
was like it was speaking to me. I could relate to the characters. You know, this was my cousin or this was my, you know, someone I knew. And I could totally relate. And as much as I wanted to finish it, you know, I also wanted to not read it as fast so that I could just savor every page. And I just fell in love with her writing style. And, of course, at that point I wanted to go out and find out everything about her and everything else that she had written. And she became my inspiration. And then, of course, later down the line, she had her success with Waiting to Exhale as far as the book to movie. And so I followed her, and she was my inspiration. And I finally decided, hey, you know, I'm going to pull this manuscript out, and I'm going to see what I can do with this manuscript. And that basically birthed actually, most people don't know it, but my first manuscript was actually called Amazing Grace. It never saw the light of day, because everyone knows my first book was The Ties That Bind. And but it was based upon reading Terry McMillan and just being so fascinated and so excited with her words and her characters and seeing her commercial success that, hey, you know, maybe I can do this. And so basically I started out, well, I didn't even start out self-published. I actually started out as what was called print on demand. And I don't even, well, I guess they still have, because I know the companies are still around. I actually went with this company called Ex Libris.
Before you get into the companies, because we're going to, you know, get into that, and you actually answered a couple of questions when you answered, you know, how your first journey took off or how the journey to your first book took off, because I was going to ask you, you know, who you know, perhaps motivated you, who's your muse or mentor, and that kind of answers, you know, Terry McMillan having, with her, you know, fabulous self, having, you know, sparked many people to read and write.
Yes, she really did.
Really,
I mean,
evoke emotion.
And also, I can say that initially, as far as her self-publishing success, and that kind of was why I decided to self-publish, was Kimberla Lawson Roby. I remember reading her story in Essence magazine, how she had quit a six-figure job in marketing, because I was also a marketing major, and she stepped out on faith and decided she was going to self-publish, and so I followed her story as well, and that's when I actually really first heard about the whole concept of self-publishing. And so those two were really my inspirations and kind of laid the groundwork or the foundation for me to say, you know, kind of branch out and walk out there on faith, so to speak.
All right. And we've had Kimberla as a guest here on our show a couple of years ago, maybe 3 to 4 years ago.
Yeah, she is great. I love Kimberla. She is so humble. And mm-hmm. she's so giving and she's so caring. Because even to this mm-hmm. day, I remember reading the article in Essence and really following her and getting her titles at the time. And I, mm-hmm. I don't know what the connection was, but somehow I got – well, I think I just got her email. And I actually emailed her and was telling her how I had seen the article in Essence and how she was an inspiration and just had a few mm-hmm. questions. I never, ever thought that one day I would pick up the phone and Kimberla was on the other line. She literally,
right.
from just me emailing her, just asking a couple of questions that she could have very easily mm-hmm. have emailed me back the answers.
Right.
She actually called me, and it was, you know, it was quite an experience to have an author calling me and talking
right.
to me, and it was just, I felt so honored to speak to her, and of course I follow her over the years and her great success, and it's mm-hmm. just amazing how willing, you know, the majority of the authors are willing, you know, to really help others, and I think that's mm-hmm. amazing as well.
And you know, it is amazing because, like you said, she could have easily, you know, answered the email or not. You know,
well, true, very true, exactly, because I'm sure she's bombarded with many, many others
exactly.
than me reaching out to her, but she took
exactly.
that time to not only, you know, not just email, but to actually call me and talk for a few minutes, and I, you know, I to this day have never forgotten that, and I carried on that spirit as well as, you know, when people reach out, aspiring authors reach out, to try to give them information as well to kind of help them along their journey.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that is really what it's about, is to be able to stay open and approachable as, you know, as you are able. Because, like you said, you can get bombarded and sometimes you have to shut it down. So
oh,
now
yeah.
let me ask you this. If you, we know that you write fiction and, you know, art mirrors life. So let me ask you, if you wrote your memoir, what would the title be?
Oh, wow. That is very hard. Because
I'm
answer because I have gone. That's a good question because I don't know if I can answer that right now because it depends on what stage or what phase of my mm-hmm. life that I'm looking at. Because right now I'm at that stage in my life where, you know, I've gotten older, of course. I've officially become an empty nester. I've gotten a divorce recently. So there's I've been laid off from a great job. And there's a lot going on right now. So at this point where I'm at right now, I don't know what that title would be as opposed to maybe what it was, say, 2 years ago or even what it will be 2 years from now. So that's a really good question.
Thank you. You know, I wanted to be ready for you, see, because I know you as an experienced, seasoned, you know, author, sage advice is, you know, a gift. And so I wanted to make sure that I came with something that would just allow our readers to really, or our readers, our listeners and readers to get to know us a little better and get
right.
more out of us than that, just the general, you know, stuff.
Exactly.
I love that
about your show is that you really get to the meat. You know, we're just not sitting here listing, oh, these are my titles, please buy them. You know, you really get to kind of know the authors and kind of get to the meat of the substance of who they are. But I'll have to get back on that because I'm not really sure right now of all these different changes and phases I've been going through lately.
Right. Well, you know what? I can totally relate, and I'll tell you, just this week, just Monday, we were dropping my last child off at the airport. And she just knew I was going to cry. I said, no, I'm not going to cry. Girl, when she disappeared behind that glass.
I can relate,
Kimberly.
And so I can totally relate to becoming a new empty nester because, you know, I heard about the empty nest, and it just didn't faze me about, you know, how empty nest would feel, because I still had someone in the nest, right?
So I had
three that were, you know, flying about and one still in the nest. So now they're all four flying about, and I was like, I could have passed out at that airport. Now she's 21, and I'm in there, oh, boo-hoo, I want my baby.
I totally get it. My daughter just turned 21 July 30th, and I also have a son who's 22. So I totally get it, and you know, so we know we have to let the birdies fly off into the world. So
well, you know what? And literally, because she has not only she's on her second trip, so now she initially went to the East Coast. And she had a very beautiful experience of flying over, you know, the White House or near the White House. She thought she had missed it, you know, went through some clouds and came out of those clouds and bow, there it was, you know.
Wow.
And so it was like, wow, just to describe something like that, that experience while President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle Obama are in office. And to be able to, you know, at least get close enough to see the White House, to be on her first, you know, trip across the country alone. So,
yeah,
this
generation, I think they are doing, I know we hear a lot of sometimes a few negative things about the millennials. But they are, I think they're a great generation. I think they are full of adventure and innovation. And I'm just always excited, you know, the way I see things, you know, live life. I mean, live life, and especially live life while you're young and free and just enjoy it. I mean, we only get one chance here. Go ahead and see and do, you know, everything that you can. Just embrace it.
Live life while you're living, basically.
Exactly, because you never know. You never know when it's up.
You don't know. Yeah. So I can definitely relate to the empty nester. And then, you know, being single again, you know, I don't use words like my ex, or I don't even say divorce. You know, that negativity, you know, I'm single, I'm free, my butterfly wings are spread, and baby, y'all ain't ready for me, okay? That's all I got to say, you know, on that. Now, which book brought out your best writing? Which book would you say brought out your best writing?
Oh, wow. You're giving me just such a great question. But, you know, as writers, we always say, oh, well, as far as the favoritism thing, because I've been asked so many times over the years, what is your very favorite book? And I can never answer that question, because that's just like asking who is your favorite child. And so I can never answer that. But as far as my, I don't know, as far as my, the one I thought was the best as far as the writing goes. I mean, I've definitely been able to see, because I can go back to my very first title, The Ties That Bind, and I can definitely see the progression in my writing skill set. So I can definitely see that. But as far as the one that I probably think has, I don't know, that's really hard. I'm just going to say Diary of a Stalker, because it had so many combinations of, I think it was some of my better writing. It's very popular, had great book club discussions, and plus it was a little different than what I had written in the past as far as just kind of going over into the erotic thriller genre. So and it was really exciting, and a sequel spun out from it. And so I would probably go back to still Diary of a Stalker, because I get asked about that particular novel the most, and readers, or even now, I mean, that book is years old, and still I get invited to book clubs, and that's the book they've chosen. And so I would probably say Diary of a Stalker, just because of all those different combinations at that level.
All right. And on that note, who is your favorite character in your books?
From Diary of a Stalker, or just any of my novels?
Oh, wow. Any of your novels. You can start with Diary of a Stalker, though.
Well, but see, each book, you know, as a writer, you fall in love with the characters at that time, and they stick with you, and they become a part of you. I remember, like, I was going to almost give some information about one of my books that I shouldn't have given. It would have been giving too much information. But, you know, there was one book that I love. This was kind of the bad. It was actually the first one, The Ties That Bind, and it had a sequel called Loose Ends. And there was one character by the name of Bryce, and he was one of those characters, because I love doing the love-hate. I love to do those types of characters where the readers, they hate them, but they just love them too, you know. And there was something that happened to him, and I remember I actually was, like, depressed. And I remember when I told this story back in the day, people kind of laughed because, like, oh, really, you're depressed. But I was, like, really depressed about the situation, because I become so attached. I don't really even see them as, like, characters. I mean, I see them as, like, well, like a friend or a family member, or the connection becomes, like, that strong. And then with Diary of a Stalker, has a very, very strong character by the name of Pilar. And, again, we're talking about that whole love-hate situation. And initially that started out as going to be one book. You know, I wanted to do something different. I went into the thriller genre and never thought about even writing another book. I ended up writing two more books, a short story, and readers are still wanting a fourth installment of these characters. And she would not leave me. I mean, even after I finished the first book, it was like I could still hear her talking in my head, because her story wasn't finished. She still had more of a story to tell. And so it became another book and a short story. And I could still sit down and you know, write another another piece regarding her and some of the characters. So so I would say, I guess maybe Pilar, as far as a more recent book, maybe Pilar from Diary of a Stalker.
All right. That's interesting. And it's interesting that you would say how, you know, you really start to become attached to the character now. So you became attached so much where you were kind of depressed at the situation that the character was going through. And you had the power to write the situation away.
but you know, I didn't. I didn't. That's the thing. And I know it sounds a little weird or whatever, but when a story ideal comes, because I, of course, like being a writer, you get at times, there are multiple story ideals that are kind of going through your mind. But I always say I go with the characters that are screaming the loudest. When I start dreaming about you, when I'm driving down the road and scenes are playing out in my mind, when I keep hearing the same opening or picturing the same opening scene, then you've caught my attention. And that was the way Pilar was in Diary of a Stalker. She came to me, and she stayed with me for like 3 years. I could not get Pilar out of my system. And the earlier title that I mentioned, The Ties That Bind and Loose Ends, it was the same with Bryce. He had that story to tell, and even though something happened, and even though I wrote it, it had to go that way. It wasn't because I wanted to go that way, because believe me, I debated and I cried on one of my girlfriend's shoulders about how I didn't want it to go that way, but it was his story, and that was the way I had to write that story. And so I was depressed for, God, I was depressed for weeks, like it was a family member or someone. And so I definitely do get really attached, and they do become like living and breathing characters, or people, should I say. And then when I go to the book club signings and meetings, it's really interesting because the people are talking to me like they are real people. I've had people, I mean, my first book came out in 2003, 2002. I have literally been at a signing, and someone will ask me, oh, what happened to, what is Mia up to? She was one of the main characters in my very first book.
Laying on the page.
And they really expect me to say, oh, well, she's doing whatever. And this was back in 2002. And I'm supposed to be able to tell them what Mia is doing. So that's when I finally realized that readers are serious.
Okay? But that is too much right there. Mia is laying on the page in the book. Where do you think Mia is?
And I get you now. That question has been asked. That question has been asked.
Wow. Well, you know what? It sounds like that would be the book that would read like a movie, and the characters are true to life. So now, let me ask you this. In terms of book reviews, what or how do you respond? Let's get into some writing stuff.
Okay, sure.
Let's say you've, you've had your discussion groups and your book clubs and some of the other things that you've mentioned, and let's talk about reviews. What happens and how do you respond to a poor review emotionally?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everyone doesn't feel our work the way we do. So what happens
exactly
when someone does not feel it and they're just like, that's just, you know, and you get that mediocre response.
Right.
How does that
right
grab you emotionally?
Well, you know, in the beginning, it used to be it was very, I can't even say frustrating because it wasn't frustrating. I'm just going to be very real. I would get upset, you know. In the very beginning, I would definitely get upset because that's just like someone telling me they don't like my baby or, you know, they don't like my child or something. So in the beginning,
oh, wow,
I was very thin-skinned, and I would
mm-hmm
kind of take things to heart and take them personally. And
mm-hmm
and I just had to kind of, you know, I had to grow out of that and not be so sensitive, you know, towards my writing and towards my novels, because I eventually realized, hey, everyone is not going to like what I write. Everyone does not like the genre that I write in. And so, you know,
mm-hmm
it is what it is. And so
right
now, you know, I can look at a review, and if it's not a good review, and I guess I've also been very lucky because I haven't had a lot of, like, just really
mm-hmm
bad reviews. Most of my reviews
mm-hmm
have been, you know, been pretty good. But, of course, you know,
right
there have been those that you speak of. But I've just kind of learned to look at it. If there is some truth in it, then I will analyze that as a way for me to grow and improve in my writing. But, you
mm-hmm
know, also in the realm of keeping it real, we also know that sometimes people, they just want to say something negative. I mean, that's just keeping it real. They just
you
want to say something
say
negative. And you can kind of see
uh-huh
the ones that are a little more maybe personal or for whatever reason that may be. And
mm-hmm
but the ones that are really more like critiques, then, you know, I do take those, and I do try to improve, if you know, in my writing based on feedback that I may have received.
Okay. You know what? I sure appreciate your honesty and, you know, the candid answer, because I'm chuckling over here when you first answered, because I remember when I first received a, like, mediocre review, it was 3.5 stars. And
mm-hmm
I'm going to be honest with you, I was livid. What? Don't they know? Lolly, lolly, lolly. You know, and what I realized is because I published self-help. Okay, the last thing people read is self-help. Okay,
mm-hmm
everyone's into this or that or that or the other, and I'm asking for reviews about awareness and information and knowledge and education, and what it taught me was not to ask for any more reviews, because I kid you not, I have not asked for a review since, because this was Gumble for the Soul, Women
uh-huh
of Honor, Special
uh-huh
Pink Edition, focusing on breast cancer awareness.
Oh,
and
I see.
So, yeah, and so it taught me that I am, or I'm asking for reviews from the wrong reviewers.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, the reviewer that I asked of was from a fiction house. And so
mm-hmm
some of her responses were like, okay, lady, do you realize that this is a self-help book? You know, because of the way I could tell, like they said, there was something that I could have evoked further. And it's like, I could evoke further? These are true stories. Do you realize this?
Exactly.
And so it was funny to me. But I'm with you now. If I have to take corrective action based off of criticism that I've received, then, you know, so be it, because you're trying to hone in on a craft. I'm like you. I started in 2003. My first book came out in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And you really do have to learn the craft, learn the process. There is
exactly.
a business and an art
exactly.
to publishing. And
mm-hmm.
so thank you for being honest about, you know, dealing with, you know, a mediocre review and understanding
yeah,
that not all people read or like what you write.
Exactly.
And
you have to and
be
I
able think to once not
I, right, exactly. And I think once I came to terms with that, that, hey, you know, it's just not going to happen. There's always going to be someone that does not like something about your works. They're not
right.
going to read what you write. They don't like your genre or whatever. And once I came to terms with that, you know, I was really okay because, you know, even outside of being an author, I'm very sensitive, so to speak. And so
I'm
it was just
sensitive about
just,
my
just,
itch.
I'm sorry.
Like Erykah Badu, I'm sensitive
oh, yeah,
about my
yes,
itch.
Exactly. Even more sensitive. Super sensitive. Don't talk about my babies.
Okay. I hear you. Now, I had an experience when I published my first book that it was an event. I traveled out of town, out of state, actually. I traveled up two states north to Washington, and I have the habit of combining fun, family, and business so
mm-hmm.
that if one of them goes, Ivory, you know, I have fun with the other two or whatever, you know, I'm going to have fun, right? So I had an unfavorable experience post this event. I sold out, hadn't been set up 10 minutes. And
oh, wow, that's excellent. That's great. Yeah, that's what we
beautiful.
All want.
Well, and the thing was is that it was one buyer. And so the minute I stacked all of
the
books on the table and everything, I was stacking them back in the box and handing them to one buyer. And he was a gentleman that was going to give my book, Gumbo for the Soul, The Recipe for Literacy in the Black Community, to
mm-hmm.
his African-American clergy constituents. And I was honored
okay.
that he
exactly.
Blessed me like that. But
mm-hmm.
some of the people there weren't as fortunate, and someone sat next to me whose book wasn't even available. Book cover wasn't even there, and they're supposed to be displaying. And so my question to you is, name one of your most unfavorable experiences at a book event. That was an example of that author because, and the reason I asked that question is because when I got back and I wrote about it, I was blessed that I sold out to one person, but I would have been livid had I depended on foot traffic, public
mm-hmm.
awareness, and visibility because it was none of that. And I wrote about that and I got into it with the event coordinator and he got
mm-hmm.
it dirty. He said, "Your mama." My mama had And I had just left the state. I'm back in California, but it got there.
I think back in the day when I was first starting out, there were like
mm-hmm.
certain events that you could not, you just had to be at those events. And so
mm-hmm.
early on, I kind of learned from experience
mm-hmm.
not to try to attend everything that was out there, because initially
mm-hmm.
I was going, you know, it was a job. Every weekend I would be from Friday at 5 o'clock until Sunday night. I was on the road. I was going out of state. I was going wherever there was connections, a book club, literary event, conference, you name it. I was there, and did that for God. So many. Well, did that until I was. I'm sorry. I can't hear you.
I said, "Lord, I thought everyone was flying and jet setting."
In the beginning, when I first started out as a self-published
mm-hmm.
author and was trying to get the attention of an agent or an editor,
mm-hmm.
I was on the road. and most of the time when I was on the road, even though I was going to other states, I was driving. And I had a little writing buddy She and I, we would hit the road after she worked, I think she worked at the time at Coca-Cola. I worked at Bank of America. So we were both downtown Atlanta. We'd get off. We'd already have the car packed, and we would hit the road, and we would be gone the whole weekend during different events. If I didn't do something every Friday, Saturday, or Sunday in the beginning, I felt like I had just totally ruined my whole weekend if I didn't do something literary. But it worked mm-hmm. because I did that for 2 years and 2 months, and I finally got the attention of an agent, and that's how I got my first deal. Then after as time mm-hmm. went on and I started getting invited to events, at that point, you mm-hmm. know, okay, I'm getting my hotel paid for, or I'm getting my flight paid for, or I'm getting something paid for. And so it right. did get better, but initially, no, that was out of my pocket, and that was me traveling and me all over the place.
Right.
But as
right.
far as events, I just kind of, again, I just, to answer your question, I just kind of learned, you know, what events to go to, and I knew those would be worth my money and my time and my effort and the visibility and the networking that came with those particular events back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
I know now,
mm-hmm.
God, there are so many different events, so many different organizations that you really don't
right,
know what to pick and choose from. And it's kind of like, hey, you show up and you don't really know, you know, you don't know what to expect. So
right.
it's really, I think it's harder now to kind of pick and choose what to, you know, spend your money on and what to attend.
That is true. That is true. You do have to use discernment. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it is a struggle. In the beginning, you know, we had to do whatever it took to get our name out there. We had to network. We had to attend. And we had to spend. And it wasn't as electronically transferable
exactly.
as it is in these
exactly.
days. We got out
mm-hmm.
there. And so what was one of the most favorable events that you attended, be it an award show
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, events that you were invited to? What was the most favorable?
Well, I think I still, out of all the different organizations and events that of all the years that, you know, I've attended, I still think I would have to say that my favorite, because I never experienced it on that level, would still be the National Book Club Conference. And that's held
okay.
here in Atlanta every year around the end of July, first weekend in August. That
mm-hmm.
Curtis Bunn is the founder or chair over that particular conference. And the reason it was different, well, first of all, it was so huge, and I was one of the featured authors, and it was like if you were in the industry, whether a writer, an agent, an editor, it was like you had to be there. And I had never seen so many book clubs. I mean, I actually took a little unofficial poll, and I've been a featured author two times. I think this is like his 14th year, I believe, and I've been a featured author twice. I think I was
okay.
the third year, and I was actually last
yeah.
year. And it's such an experience because, first of all, everyone that's in the industry pretty much is there. And then to have book clubs from all over the country. I didn't meet a book club that was from the same state. I literally, everyone I was meeting, they were from different states. Never like, oh, you know, so it was like they come from all over the country, and they're, you know, head to toe with their paraphernalia, and they know you. They've been following you, and you can be walking up the hallway to your room or something, and they're stopping you, and they have their bags, and they're pulling out, you know, every one of your books for you to autograph, or you're eating
wow.
lunch, and you're sitting with the readers, and they're going back to your book three talking about the characters, you know, like they're their best friends. And that was
wow.
such a great experience. It gave me so much inspiration to bond with all these book clubs and to be able
mm-hmm.
to see an agent or to see one of the editors from you know, from a publishing house in New York. Or so it was just a great experience, and just to feel, you know, like you're this rock star, you know, this literary rock star, to have, you know, people stopping you to take pictures, and they literally
right.
pull out, you know, every book that you have written up to that point, you know, not just one, but they're pulling them all out, and they are telling you stuff. They've read your interviews, they read your blogs, and it was like an
right.
amazing experience, that especially that very first time when I didn't know what to expect. And then even
mm-hmm.
this time, you know, the second time around was great as well, and plus I'm seeing my idols. I'm seeing Terry McMillan. 1 year, you know, there's, God, my mind just went blank. Elian Harris, you know, he's there. I'm seeing Walter
oh, wow.
Mosley.
That's
you know,
indeed.
I'm seeing my idols, the people I've looked up to.
Right.
You know, I'm
wow.
love, you know, Eric Jerome Dickey. You know, I'm taking a picture beside Eric Jerome Dickey. So
wow.
it's just a great it's just a great experience that whole weekend to just literally talk, breathe, live the industry, reading, writing, the love
awesome.
Of it, and you're just bonding through that experience, and you meet people that,
that
you may
awesome.
Have just talked to online, and you're seeing them face to face for the first time. So it's
mm-hmm.
it's a great experience, and whenever I do book club meetings, I always tell them about that event and encourage them to attend.
Mm-hmm. And as you were going to these different events and garnering
mm-hmm.
this attention, and you finally get the attention of the agent, what
mm-hmm.
did that feel like? What was your method of getting that agent's attention, be it query letter, proposal
mm-hmm.
packet already prepared? But how
mm-hmm.
were you prepared for that agent? So tell us about that whole experience.
Well, you know, things
of becoming
I always
agented.
I always say things happen for a reason, and I definitely believe that. I mean, I know it sounds a little cliche, but I definitely believe that things happen for a reason. Now, this was
I
a long time.
I believe it as well, and it does.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that sometimes things just line up perfectly, and in my situation, you know, this was years ago, back in 2004, I believe. I had been laid off from a job at Bank of America, had been there, great career there, got laid off when kind of the financial institutions were kind of crashing, so to speak. So this was, we're talking
right.
about a while back. And so basically,
yeah,
since I had been there.
The whole mortgage banking.
Well, this was even before this recent one. This was, you know, this was back in like 2002. I mean, that's how far back this was, back in 2002. And a lot of the
okay,
large banks
okay.
were laying off. Like, I was
oh,
the second
okay.
wave at Bank of America. They had initially laid off like 10,000 people. Then they came back
okay.
and set like another, you know, 5,000 or something. So these were like massive
wow.
layoffs back in the day.
Right, right.
And
okay.
I had been there for quite a few, many years, and so I had a great severance package and everything, but I wasn't having any luck getting back into the banking arena because, you know, everything was kind of, they were just not hiring because all the banks were going through this. And so I had
mm-hmm.
actually come to the very end of my severance package. The whole time I had been laid off, unemployed. I had been writing, working on my second novel. That was kind of my therapy during that time. So I would write on my manuscript, and I would also look for a job. And so
okay.
basically, it was getting ready to end as far as the severance package, and I decided that, hey, you know, self-publishing is expensive. I've got to cut back because I can't do it. I haven't gotten a job. My severance package is getting ready to end. Right around that time, literally my severance ended 1 week. Literally the beginning of the next week, out of the blue, I get an email. I'm sitting in front of my computer doing my regular routine, looking for a job, and I get an email, and it's from a literary agent. And I always laugh about this, how I almost deleted the email because I thought it was one of my girlfriends playing a joke on me because I had just literally told her just a couple of days earlier that I'm going to have to pull back on the self-publishing because it was too expensive, and I was going to have to start looking for an agent. So it was on a Friday. It was like late in the day on a Friday. And so during that weekend, I actually, you know, looked up the agency and realized it was legitimate and, you know, got a little information on it. And so first thing Monday morning, well, actually not first thing. I was up bright and early that Monday morning, but the agent was out in California, so I had to wait on their, you know, wait for them for it to be 8 o'clock in California. And so those were the longest, you know, the longest hours. But basically I talked, we connected. I talked to the guy. I talked to him for, I think, about 3 hours. And he had heard of The Ties That Bind. He had heard the buzz around The Ties That Bind. So me being out there for 2 years, 2 months, going everywhere, networking, he had heard about it. And he was all the way out in California. And so basically we talked from my marketing plan, my sales, to my business plan, to my dreams for where I want to be in the literary arena in 5 years. We just talk. By the time the conversation ended, he said he thought that he could get me a deal. And so basically, to make the long story short, within 30 days from the day that we had talked, he had gotten me a 3-book deal with a major publishing house. I actually went through Penguin. The imprint was called New American Library. It was a 3-book deal, and it was a 6-figure deal. And that was the beginnings of my writing career, basically being an unknown author, just out there, you know, kind of doing my thing, trying to get the attention, going all over the place like crazy. And this guy out in California hears about my little title, The Ties That Bind, and he gets me a three-book deal with the major publishing house. So, and at one point there was even a bidding war going on where there were three different publishing houses that were interested in my title. And so he, you know, we talked and decided that we were just going to go with Penguin. And that's how it all officially started. And at the time, you know, I really thought I was going to be, like, jumping up and down and screaming and just going absolutely crazy. But I think I was in such shock that after he hung up, you know, he had called me that, because all that day we were talking back and forth. And he was, like, you know, sending me emails telling me what the editors were saying. And we were just going, he was like, okay, you know, this company's interested. And so back and forth we were going. And so finally towards a little bit, maybe, I think it was maybe 2, 3 o'clock, he finally called me and he told me, you know, are you standing? You know, sit down. I got some great news for you. And that's what he told me, you know, about Penguin. And I thought I would start screaming or whatever, but I was like, just as calm. And it was, I will never forget that day. I mean, it was just such an exciting day. I mean, I'm laid off from a job. I'm here at the house by myself. My kids were at school. My husband at the time, you know, he's at work, and just all day long, just going back and forth, and to have that a dream realized, it was like such a great experience that I will never, you know, never forget that day. Beverly?
Remind everyone and our listeners, I see the phones are lit up, that if for any reason you have technical difficulties and you can't be heard when I open up the phone lines, feel free to call right back and I will reconnect you. And that goes for you as well, Electa. Not sure if we'll be able to get to these callers because I just lost some time and I have a few more questions here. So
okay,
what
sure,
I basically
sure.
That I was saying congratulations to you on your success getting – I heard every word you said, and I could hear you saying, Beverly, Beverly. I'm like, oh, no. But congratulations to that, and I know that moment was surreal and that, you know, with you being that calm, everyone's out of the house, you probably were screaming inside, but it was just like, God, I can't believe it in the nick of time here.
Exactly.
Now, let me ask you this. Describe the publishing process of working with a major like Penguin, like the Penguin mm-hmm. Group.
Well, I really enjoyed it because of the fact that even though I started out as a print-on-demand and then went into the traditional self-publishing, I never really wanted to be an entrepreneur because it took away from my writing. I mean, you have to wear so many different hats, and, I mean, you do it all. And it was taking away
right.
from the writing experience. And all I've ever really wanted to do is to just write. I just like the creative aspect. Even though I was a business marketing major in college, I just wanted to write. And so having the ability where there was an editor, there was a graphic artist, and being able to have an agent to discuss the business side, and just not to have all those worries on my plate, and knowing I don't have to make a collection call because someone hasn't, you know, paid me, or you know, just whatever that may be. I just, and having a PR person, even though I still always continue that. I mean, after being picked up, you still had to continue that in conjunction with what they were doing. But yeah, so I really have always loved that because it frees you of wearing all the other hats and I can just focus on being creative. And because I've always said that, you know, if I'm happy, I know a lot of authors can put out, got multiple books in 1 year. I was always happy if I put out a book a year, and for the longest period of time, that's the way it was. Some years I would have maybe an anthology that came out, so I would have two books to drop. But I was always happy if just one book dropped a year. I was happy.
Wow, amazing. And you answered that and kind of got us caught up a little bit. I do want to ask you some more questions. I want to also remind our listeners to tell a friend, call in 347-539-5285, and we're going to open up the phone lines in about 5 minutes at the top of the hour. So I do see you callers, and go ahead and press 1 if you want to speak, and I will open up that phone line as soon as we get to that portion. Now, let me ask you this, Electa, what critical advice do you have for first-time authors? Obviously, the dynamics have changed. The landscape has changed in as far as when you and I first hit the scene.
Exactly.
Going everywhere. Now, with the digital platforms that enable you to be everywhere globally, it kind of takes away from having to get on that road going to event after event after event. So getting out there, what critical advice do you have for first-time authors with the new landscape that they're working with?
Wow. And it really is so different than back in the day. And I guess there are pros and cons to each one. I just think even though we're so connected online and through social media, I still felt actually more of a connection, believe it or not, when I was actually on the road and meeting the, you know, authors who were aspiring authors just like myself, and having that camaraderie, and it seems like everyone was cheering everyone on and everyone was sharing information, and it just felt like it was just so new, you know, because I think back in the day we used to say this was the whole new black renaissance, and everybody was like so proud and honored to like be a part of this new renaissance of black, you know, art and authorship and all of that. But now, I mean, you know, it's like you said, it's very, very easy. It's much cheaper to just be able to do social media and just really promote yourself, which is a great, you know, a great tool. You know, because I remember spending, you know, lots of money. If I could go back and get some of those dollars back. So back in the day, lots of money could be spent for promoting. But now social media makes it much, much easier. But the two pieces of advice that I've always, you know, regardless of what's changed, I've always said, one thing that's really big is to network, and that's what I did and I still try to do to this day is just, you know, try to attend all sorts of literary events, anywhere from book clubs, festivals, conferences, you know, just whatever, network with other authors, especially authors that, you know, find someone that's like a mentor, someone you aspire to be like or writes in your genre. So I think networking is very, very important to just kind of, so people can kind of know who you are and you can kind of know the players in the game as well, very, very important. And also I think it's very important that for the people that have a true love of writing and they don't really, and I know I sometimes get in trouble for saying this, but it's the reality that some people, you know, it's more of a hustle. You know, with me, I always say that, you know, regardless of whether I was never paid another cent, you know, writing is just a part of who I am, and when I'm disconnected from it, I feel disconnected. Is this something is missing? And so this is a true love for me. And so for those people who this is true and genuine and it's just not like another hustle, or maybe you like seeing your name, or you just always had this dream of writing a book or whatever, but for the people that are truly writers in spirit and heart, you just have to keep growing. You have to keep learning. I don't care if you have 5 books out there. You got to keep growing and keep expanding, and you know, don't get caught in a pigeonhole where you can only writing in a certain genre. You know, branch out. You know, just be creative and enjoy it, and just keep continue to grow and evolve in the writing craft.
And you may be on two of the other questions, but I'm going to ask them, pose them to you anyway, just in case you have, several approaches. So the next question would be, what types of promotional techniques has worked best for garnering sales? What types of promotional techniques has worked best for garnering sales?
Okay. Well, and I'm just going to be honest. As far as recently, I've kind of have not been out there like I have been in the past because of a lot of things that have been going on, and some of them personal. So I really haven't been out there the way I was, like really maybe back in the day, or even a couple years ago, because of different situations
right,
that are going on
then,
right now. But I've always the rise of social media, so to speak, I've always tried to just really use social media as a tool because, first of all, it's free and you can get to a great number of people that way. So using social media as a tool to promote yourself, getting with companies. Back in the day, I used to use my mind just went blank here. I can't remember the name of the company, but I would always, like, purchase ads and always would
constant
be on their
contact
site
and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just basic. I mean, it's always just a combination. I mean, a lot of the things that I used when I first started out, I mean, I was literally, believe it or not, actually sending mailings out back in the day, packages out of my information, which, of course, now you can just do all that electronically. But just really just utilizing social media to, definitely courting the book clubs, and I can't say that enough as far as actually I used to have a huge list of book clubs all across the country, book clubs in every single state, and knowing the presidents of these book clubs and reaching out to these book clubs and telling them about your new book that's getting ready to drop, and getting test readers. I used to love to have my little beta readers that would read my manuscript before I even sent it. Even though I had a publishing house that had an editor and all of that, I still kind of used some of my old ways, and I would always have my test readers that would read read the manuscript before I even sent it to the editor. And sometimes I would change things. Other times, I would not. But I love their feedback because these were the people who loved this genre and who would eventually, these would be the type of people reading my manuscript. So I definitely honored, their critiques or whatnot. I could just go on and on. I mean, there are just so many ways and so many different things, and having bookmarks and flyers and just using those. I mean, I was always told don't ever leave anyone without handing them something that they can take with them. After you've told them about your book, put something in their hand. And so I could just go on and on and on. There are just so many ways. I mean, I even used to, and actually still do, I used to say, well, if I can get a bill in the mail and they got all this stuff to me, trying to sell me something, I'm going to put my bookmark in a bill that I'm sending to them to try to sell them my book. So just anything you can think of. I mean, just any type of guerrilla tactic, so to speak, or just anything you can think of. I used to do and still try to do. Even I'm more really now more into, I guess, the social media side at this point.
Right. Which leads to my next question. Have the changing industry impacted your marketing strategies, i.e. online versus in person? And you probably have answered that, but what do you see in terms of ongoing, in terms of how the industry is now? How do you feel it's going to impact the newcomers, because we've been impacted as far as going from, where you had to be at an event to now you can be at home and still rerun all over. Do you see, or how has the changing industry impacted your marketing strategies by now being able to do that from home? Do you see yourself doing more of the online networking, and do you anticipate in the future that you would get out more to events? You know, would you switch up strategies? How would you approach it? Just
Well, at this point in time right now, I think the big thing is definitely social media, because it's so easy and it's inexpensive and you can reach a mass number of people, you know, just at your fingertips, so to speak. And that's I think that's really big. So I found that I do definitely utilize social media to really get the word out much more so than, you know, back in the day when you would find me every weekend trying to do something Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You know, those days are kind of gone, at least on my end. In fact, I don't even do – I mean, I would always, when a new book would drop, I already had my schedule lined up doing the various book signings, you know, going to the different states, going to the different stores, the Borders and the Books A Million and, you know, all those stores, you know, the Walden Books, you know, all those stores that a lot of them, which are no longer here, but,
right.
You know, going at – and, of course, the independents as well. You know, you had to just kind of make the rounds. And I find that, you know, I don't do that anymore. You know, I just don't really go out doing that, because a lot of times you just kind of never knew who would be there or how many would be there. And you could kind of – it was kind of like a, hey, surprise, you know. You just never knew what you were going to walk into. And so I find that I don't do as many book signings as I used to do back in the day. I'm finding that I do more things online. As far as my advertising, I'm not doing, you know, mailings or things of that nature. And as far as events, I'm usually picking maybe two or three big ones that I know are you know, pretty much major. And that's it. I don't typically go to the smaller ones. But the one thing that has been consistent is I definitely still keep in touch with the book clubs. I think the book clubs, they're the ambassadors. They're going to get the word out, good or bad, they're going to get the word out. And I think they should definitely not be underestimated. So I always, you know, keep good relations with the book clubs all across the country and love, to this day, love doing the book club meetings and things of that nature. So I think – on one end, I've scaled back as far as, you know, just really being out there, which I, to be honest, I actually miss, because I really enjoy doing the one-on-one connecting with the readers and getting that feedback and that face-to-face. But you know, that's just the world we live in, where everything is kind of social media now.
That's true. And, you know, I just want to thank you for allowing me to, you know, pick your brain and figure out, you know, how you became – so successful in, you know, having written 11 books and, you know, award-winning six-figure deals, six-figure three-book deals. I mean, you've done it all. You've traveled all everywhere, major, publishing companies. You've been signed with HarperCollins, Penguin Group, just to name a few. And so I'm going to open up the phone lines and see if any of our callers have any questions for you.
Okay, great.
Let's go with area code 215. You're on the air with Tribe Family Channels Literary Festival and Electra Rome Parks. Did you have a question or a comment?
Hello?
Hi, area code 215. You're on the air with Electra Rome Parks and Beverly Black of Tribe Family Channels Hot Fun in the Summertime Literary Festival. Who are we speaking with?
Jarrell Smith, actually.
Hi, Gerald. How are you? Did you have a question or a comment?
Oh, no, it's not Gerald. It's Jarrell. Hi, Electra.
Hi, we know each other how are you doing?
Yeah, we know each other through Facebook, actually.
Yes, we do.
Right.
We do. Thank you for tuning in.
Yeah, I just want to let you know I've been writing with a notepad and a pen for the past hour. So, yeah.
And this is my first time hearing his voice, Beverly.
Yeah, because we've been talking forever, but yeah. But I just want to I probably said this on Facebook before, but I just wanted to say it, how awesome you are, because
I
don't think I told you, but through high school and everything, high school was really hard, so a lot of your books really helped me out, especially True Confessions. It got me writing in a journal to get through everything. So
I mean,
on Facebook and stuff, when I say you guys, a lot of the authors I have friends with on Facebook are inspirations. Like, you guys really don't understand how much you helped me through my life. So I just wanted to say how awesome you were.
Oh, thank you. I so appreciate that. I really do. And Beverly, this is one of my youngsters, I guess. He reached out a few years ago, you know, aspirations of being a writer, a very talented guy, just recently released his debut novel, and I'm just very, very proud of him. But this is the first time I've actually heard his voice. We've just kind of communicated via Facebook for a few years.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. And I messed up your name. Did you say Gerald?
It's Jarrell.
Jarrell?
Yes, Jarrell, yes.
Okay, it's nice to meet you, Jarrell. And I'm so honored that you're able to finally speak with someone that has inspired you. And she is a beautiful soul. It's been an honor speaking with her.
Thank you.
And you're over there taking notes. And, you know, you're welcome to join the Literary Festival. So follow Tribe Family Channel on Facebook as well. And we'll get you on the show to talk about, you know, your work.
Cool. Thanks.
All right.
That's great. Okay. So there's networking at its finest.
Yep.
There you go. You never know when you call in a show, right?
Yep, you never know. Because I'm new to all this. So I'm new to all this. So when I saw it on Facebook, I'm like, okay, let me take notes. I'm new to all of this.
Well, I definitely appreciate your tuning in. That means a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we do. We both appreciate your tuning in. And go ahead and continue holding, all right?
Okay.
All right, thank you.
All right, you're welcome.
That's so wonderful because that's what it's about, is being able to bring our voices to where we're accessible to people that are new in the industry.
Exactly. Exactly, because like I said, there were people that were there for me in the beginning. And plus, I love this. So I love sharing information. I mean, I'm actually, people are like, oh, you always say you're quiet. I am. I'm a quiet, shy. Well, I always say I was shy when I was younger. I'm not really shy now, but I am quiet. But I can talk for hours about reading and writing because, to me, I always have to say the two together because, to me, they always kind of like go together. I'm a very avid reader and a writer, and to me, those two kind of naturally go together. But
right.
But I could talk about this forever. I mean, I love this. When I say that, I really feel disconnected. I mean, I haven't really been as active as I've been in previous years with my writing the last few years, and I feel that void. I mean, I feel like something is missing, and I know that's a piece of what is missing. And so hopefully I'm going to, you know, just really come back full force and just really get out there like I'm used to being out there. But yeah, it's something that will always it's just part of who I am as a person.
Right. And you kind of went into my next question, which is what's on the horizon for Electa Rome Parks? And basically you are planning to really get that author and that writing bud to blossom again is what it sounds
exactly.
Like there's a new
blossom
coming.
Yeah. Yes, I'm so looking forward to it. Like I said, I've been away now for a few years, and I've been away as far as not being as active as I've been in past years. But as far as the writing aspect, you know, I'm still journaling and I'm still writing in some form or another. So I'm still that hasn't left. It might just be for me, but you know, my therapy or whatever. But that's still there. But yes, I definitely want to just really come back really strong and just really get back out there. And I'm still doing book clubs. And I did the National Book Club Conference recently, and I'm still doing book club events, things of that nature, but you know, I'm ready for the new book to drop. That's what I'm waiting for. The new novel to drop is what I'm anxious to happen now.
Well, we're anxious for you, and again, it's always a privilege, an honor, and a pleasure. Now, tell our audience how they can connect with you as they also anticipate your dropping another book. How can they connect?
Okay, sure. Well, I'm very active on social media. I think I probably am I'm probably on Facebook the most. So just go under, you know, Facebook under my name, Electa Rome Parks. And then I also have a website that's under my name, www.electaromeparks.com. And pretty much it has a listing of all my books to date. So all 11 titles are out there and where you can go to order those backlist titles as well. And as far as Twitter, you know, I've really got to really do better because I'm not a big Twitter person. I am out there under my name, but I've got to get better at that, and I admit that. So reach out to me on Facebook or my website.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know what? You can also reach us at Tribe Family US on Twitter. You can reach me, Beverly Black, the creator of Tribe Family Channel, under our Gumbo for the Soul International brand on Twitter, at Gumbo for the Soul. You can also access our archives here at blogtalkradio.com/Gumbo for the Soul. This has been brought to you by Gumbo for the Soul International and Tribe Family Channel. Electa, thank you so much. We
thank
had
you,
some
Beverly.
Hot fun this summertime literary festival. Always a pleasure, always a pleasure. And I want to remind our listeners to tune in next Friday when we're going to do it all over again. Look for me on Facebook, Tribe Family Channel under Beverly Black Tribe FC, or also on Facebook.com/Gumbo for the Soul. And we will definitely be promoting next Friday's show. Also, next Monday on Soul School Music Mondays, we are having a special celebration in honor of Luther Vandross, and that is going to be with Soul School Music Mondays with Marshall Thompson, the last man standing of the Shy Lights, and Mr. Gregory Gibbs, who is a Luther Vandross protege. So be sure to tune in on Tribe Family Channel, and we will talk to you again. Thank you, Electa. Have a
thank
blessed
you.
Weekend.
Hugs, Beverly. Love you.
Hugs. Much love, sister. Much love. And thank you again, Queen.
Thank you. Good night.
End of the-